Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org.
I'd like to ask you to read out loud, starting with Marcia and going this way, one paragraph or verse at a time. Yeah, you know, if it looks... There's some conversation in here. If you want to take a couple of paragraphs, those short paragraphs, that'd be fine. Marcia?
One day, Mei Woman Peng went into the Deer Gate Temple and made an offering of food. The temple priest asked her on whose behalf she made the offering so that he could dedicate its merit.
She took a comb and stuck it in the back of her hair. "Dedication of merit is complete," she said, and walked out.
Once, when the layman was on his way to sell his bamboo baskets, he stumbled and fell while crossing over a bridge. When Ling Chao saw this, she came to her father's side and fell on the ground.
The layman said,
"What are you doing?"
Ling Chao said, "I saw you had fallen, so I came to lend a hand," the layman said. "But who can see what there is to take hold of?"
The layman was sitting in his thatched cottage one day. "Difficult, difficult, difficult," he exclaimed, "like trying to scatter 10 measures of sesame seed all over a tree."
"Easy, easy, easy," returned Lay Woman Pang, "just like touching your feet to the ground when you get out of bed."
"Neither difficult nor easy," said Ling Chao. "On 100 grass tips, the ancestors meeting."
Thank you. It's great to hear all of your voices. So here we are, day two. In yesterday's story, those who weren't here, those who were here will remember that Layman Pang interacts with a master, and says, the master says, "What you've been doing?" And Layman Pang says, "Not much." And he continues, "Just doing my supernatural power of drawing water and carrying wood. That is his miraculous or his marvelous activity." And that chopping wood, carrying water, that becomes a kind of mantra for lay people throughout the centuries. You know, those are our simple acts. That's our practice. We have to learn to do it that way, through these simple acts. So in some way, maybe Layman Pang, I think, was educating the monk here about another kind of practice. In day two here, we're moving on from Layman Pang to the rest of his family, his wife and his daughter, who were also adepts at Zen. And in the first story here, we have Lay Woman Pang, and she also interacts with a monk here, and she shows some confidence here. She's not cowed in the least. They have confidence, this Pang family. So she's talking the story here is that the priest asks, who would you like to dedicate the merit to? And this idea of merit, you know, goes way back in Buddhism. For a lay person in particular, you see, to get a good life, you donate to the monastery. Convenient for us. And you get a good rebirth by earning that merit or by doing good deeds. And one of the best things you can do in terms of good deeds is to give to a monastic community to help the monks. And so this system is still alive and well. My mother and father went to Thailand and they came back and said, wow, you didn't tell me about all this merit earning that was part of the tradition. And that's true. I didn't tell them about that because we in the Zen tradition don't emphasize it so much now. But as you can see, back in the day, it was alive and well. So she could dedicate the merit to a certain person, for instance. And in Layman Pang's day, her name and the gift, and I think this continues even in Japan, her name and the gift and the dedication would be written down and displayed, you see, put up on the wall. And that's the dedication of the merit. So Lay Woman Pang says, yeah, keep your merit. I don't need it. There, done. And the message to me is she's doing this because she wants to. She's given this food because she wants to give it. It's a free gift. Keep your merit. And by the way, she's also a practitioner. She doesn't need it. She's doing her practice. However you feel about merit, and the Zen school, you know, has a whole thing. I mean, okay, I'll just take a little aside. You know, Bodhidharma, who's founded the Zen school, was asked by Emperor Wu, how much merit have I gained because I did all these good things? You know, I've made lots of monks, I built lots of monasteries. And Bodhidharma replied, no merit. And that really annoyed Emperor Wu because he was looking for a different answer. So our relationship with merit, kind of goes back to that moment. At the same time, it keeps popping up over and over again, this idea of merit. It's a very useful idea, apparently. But however you feel about merit, I think you probably know, I do, the feeling of wanting approval. Of wanting recognition, you know, for the good deed that we have done. And Lay Woman Pang doesn't need to be good. She doesn't need that recognition. She doesn't need to be seen to be good. She doesn't need that virtue signaling, as they say. When I wear my KUOW shirt, that's virtue signaling all over it. I gave. That's kind of dedication of the merit right there. Yeah, she doesn't need credit. And Layman Pang also, you know, he doesn't need those. In the first story, he doesn't need the ranks of vermilion and purple. This lay tribe doesn't need those. That system. So, what she does, this because she doesn't need to be good, and that's a Zen theme too. Throughout the tradition, to act naturally, to be able to act naturally, without buying into these pressures. When you give, you just give naturally and freely. And I think this practice really can help with that. As you and I get to know this person with nothing to do, person with nothing else to do, we can act a little more from that place. From that place that is free from ambition. Free from wanting anything in return. That just acts naturally. And then generosity is true generosity. And that's laywoman Pang's example for me. Second story here. We have Ling Chao, whose name means spirit shining in Chinese. This is the daughter, you know. So for those who weren't here yesterday, Layman Pang, at some point after he got serious about practice, he was a successful businessman, and he floated all of his belongings, put all of his belongings on a boat, floated it out, and then scuttled the boat. So it's all there at the bottom of the lake. And then he went traveling. They went to go stay with Layman Pang's sister. And that, I think they kind of seemed to use that as a home base, and then went traveling. And in particular, Pang and Ling Chao went traveling together. When they were, you know, according to the record, she took after her father. When they were young, they read books together, debated them, and Layman Pang loved debating. So after this great sinking, Pang left for two or three years to study with Matsu, one of the masters I mentioned yesterday. And he lived there and had a great awakening there. Came back home, and at this point Ling Chao's 28. And after a stay, he says he's ready to go again. And Ling Chao says, I'll read you one recounting of this. When Pang announced that he was leaving again, she recited to him the words of the Vimalakirti Sutra. I have looked for the essential qualities of men and women and cannot find them, she quoted with perfect equanimity. The Buddha said that no one is really a man or a woman. Such things neither exist nor do not exist. So I'm coming too. This was unexpected. He decided to test her again. What does this old saying mean? Bright, bright are the grasses in the meadow. Bright, bright is the ancient teaching. Such a wise man, and you talk like that, she answered. He grunted. Okay, how would you say it? Bright, bright are the grasses in the meadow. Bright, bright is the ancient teaching. Pang had no answer then. She threw his teaching at formlessness at him, and he caught it. So she knew he would have to let her come along. So she went traveling with him, and they traveled together for years. They famously picked bamboo and wove baskets and sold the baskets to make money by the side of the road. And often they'd stay in monasteries and in the guest houses. And so here's this story, this odd story, where, you know, he's crossing a bridge and falls, and she helps him, jumps in to the ditch maybe, and lays down next to him. I don't know if she's just playing around or if she's trying to help him. I guess she's trying to help him. And the father turns it into teaching. He says, who can see what there is to take hold of? Who can see what there is to take hold of? Well, for me, that points to how can we really lend a hand? How can we really help people? Who can see what there really is to help? Pang says, you can take a hold of my hand, but can you see what to take hold of to really help me? Can you help people's deeper needs? This is a theme in Zen. Okay, you can help me, but can you help my deeper needs? Poem from Ikkyu. I'd love to give you something, but what would help? Zen, you know, sometimes doesn't look super helpful. But our practice develops something long term. Some strength and clarity and the ability to work with people in distress. So as a nurse or a teacher or a friend or a parent or a chaplain, we're there doing what needs to be done. Helping materially, giving advice. But there's something else. There's something else that we ought not overlook, the Zen school says. The clarity and the presence that one has counts for so much. The deeper compassion of being right there, if you're a caregiver, right there with the person being helped. Can you take a hold of that? It's another level of help, I think. Can we lend our hand and our not hand at the same time? Can we take a hold of a person's hand and their not hand? Can we help on both levels? And there are, you know, there are a number of Zen stories that about this deeper level of help that we hope to develop. Zen Master Ryokan, given some talks on him, was a master and a practitioner who lived in the 1700s, so 1,000 years after Lama Pang. And he was a special guy. In Japan. Oh, I mentioned that. Okay. He was a special guy. He didn't have many life skills. He was a hermit. And so sort of he was not a nurse. He was not even a teacher, really. But he loved playing with children. He was good at that. And he was really a very fine poet. And he was always losing things, you know, misplacing his begging bowl. I counted 4 poems that feature losing his begging bowl in his canon. And here's one simple one. I forgot my bowl again. Please nobody pick it up. My lonely little bowl. It gives you a sense of Ryokan. And this was too much to transcribe here, but I have a quote from a fellow who Ryokan visited. This gives you a sense for what I'm talking about. Ryokan stayed with us for a couple of days. A peaceful atmosphere filled our house, and everyone became harmonious. This atmosphere remained for some days, even after he left. As soon as I started talking with him, I realized that my heart had become pure. He did not explain Zen or other Buddhist scriptures, nor did he encourage wholesome actions. He would burn firewood in the kitchen or sit in meditation in our living room. He did not talk about literature or ethics. He was indescribably relaxed. He taught others only by his presence. That also is help. That's something we shouldn't forget, I think. And you can't buy it. You can't even teach it. It takes a certain level of training and experience. And that takes helping to the next level. Okay, let's take a look at this last story. This is my favorite Pang story. So sitting in their cottage here, Pang says, difficult, difficult, difficult. I assume he's talking about practice here. You know, like trying to put sesame seeds on each leaf of a tree. You know that feeling, like trying to get rid of each thought one at a time, trying to get each leaf, sweep them out one at a time, and here comes another, trying to relinquish every desire. The four great vows are about all about this. These keep coming, and we keep sweeping them away one at a time. I'm going to transform all of them, all of the greed, hatred, and ignorance. Go through every Dharma gate. Difficult, difficult, difficult! I love that Pang... You remember the Pang of yesterday? The one who was talking to his first teacher? No hindrance all day long. Everything's fine. You know, no conflict. And now today, difficult. Again, it does take difficulty, this practice. It takes, it is difficult at times, of course. It takes work, it takes patience. That thought factory of ours churns out opinions and irritations and ideas all day long. And we have to just take them one at a time. That's why, that's part of the practice. And after a time, and then all of a sudden, you probably know this feeling, all of a sudden, the bell rings and you stand up for Kinhin and your feet hit the floor and it's easy. Easy, 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 says Mrs. Pang. Don't be so complicated. So after some time trying to address every thought, everything that comes up, as we do that, as we breathe, we relax our mind and our body, and it gets easier to go directly to what Buddha called our source. That opens up spontaneously. It's hard to make that happen, but we can make the ground ready for it, you know? We can open up to that possibility. And we do that with a difficult, difficult, difficult. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, I think, that really much of our time, much of our time in practice is a mix of this difficult and easy. We have to know that going into it. It's not going to be just easy. It's not going to be just difficult. It's going to be a mix of those. And, the Buddha said, you have to play a lute, you can't be strung too loose or too tight. So when we're working too hard to cover each leaf, and that's all the practice is about, we have to breathe, we have to remember to breathe, we have to find some ease, relax. When we're too sleepy, too comfortable, then we have to get back to work. Find a deeper place of zero. And then ultimately, Ling Chao says, The way is neither of these. It's beyond the duality of difficult and easy. She has the last word, of course, here. You know, she's really the right one. That's where Ling Chao points. And then that's, she says, where the ancestors point. That's where the deepest teaching is. Your affairs have been settled. The moment is perfect as it is. On 100 grass tips, the ancestors' meaning, on every blade of grass. And she's pointing to Buddha's world, to the ancestors' world, which is beyond difficult or easy. So I assume the Pang family here is, you know, I love this scene too, you know, here they are just shooting the breeze about the practice. And I assume they are discussing practice here. But this is also true of our lives. Sometimes our lives are difficult and sometimes they're easy. Sometimes they're beyond difficult or easy, in particular for practicing. And we have to learn to practice with both difficult and easy. We set it up, I mean, even though this might seem difficult, the situation that you find yourself in some ways we try to make it as easy as possible. We just take away as many choices as possible. And we make it warm enough. It's warm enough. And when it's pouring rain outside, we don't go outside. Look how easy we make it. We do actually make a kind of artificial environment here where it is easy to do difficult work, to drop ourselves, to really have that feeling of not needing to think, not needing to be anywhere or do anything in particular. But the truth is, in order to grow as human beings, we can't stay in that bubble. We have to run up against both difficult and easy times. So I'll leave you with one last Pang story. This is from the Blue Cliff Record. It's the only Layman Pang story in those two great collections of the Mumenkan and the Hekigan Roku, the Blue Cliff Record. So it's the story of Layman Pang visiting the monastery, and he's given tea. At this point, he is well known and respected, and the sign of that respect is the teacher sends him away, sends 10 monks to guide him to, you know, out the door. So he has an entourage, and they get to the gate, they get to the porch, and it's snowing. And Layman Pang gestures to the snow. He says, "Ah, the snow is so beautiful. Each flake lands in the same place." You know that feeling? You know, it's so beautiful. Just lose yourself in the snow. I'm transfixed by it. And the meaning, from my point of view, is each flake is landing in the perfect place, just where it should. And in the world that's beyond good or bad, you know, everything lands in its place. There's no better place or worse place. And so he's pointing to Buddha's world. He says, each flake lands in the same place. And the monk asks, so where do they fall? And Layman Pang slaps him. And Pang says, don't interrupt this moment with your analysis. Where exactly does it fall? But what I love is, so there's a commentary on these. You know, the whole Zen tradition is like story and then commentary. And sometimes the commentary has fun with the story. So in the commentary by Sedcho, he says, why didn't you hit him with a snowball? He's talking to the monk. In place of your first question. And he really wants him to do this. He, in the verse afterwards, the very end, he says, hit him with a snowball. Hit him with a ball. He really wants him to hit him with a snowball after. He says, oh, everything's landing in the right place. You know? Snow. Now, try this snowball. Did that hit in the right place? In the perfect place? Work with that, Layman Pang. When life hits you, you know, can you take it and go? Can you harmonize with that? That's also our practice. Yesterday, Layman Pang was in harmony with his daily activities. Can we be in harmony with a face full of snow, with a shock? This Rinzai practice is a little bit, just has a little taste of that, you know. We're always getting up and going for a walk just as soon as we get settled. We're always moving kind of at a little bit faster than we might. The way we learn to harmonize with those things is to harmonize with the simplest things. To harmonize, to discover our breath, to discover present moment awareness as fully as we can. Let's do that work today and get prepared.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.